Across the city and South Cambridgeshire.
On FM, digital and your mobile.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
I'm going to read you the menu. It's fantastic.
So we get better flavour because of the fen soil.
I've drunk more beer since I came here and bought my two barrels than I've ever done in my life before, I think.
I shouldn't have said almonds. They don't make it from almonds.
So you've got this big sticky mess when you start off.
Pizza pot pies.
My wife's cakes are selling up hot cakes. Brilliant, thank you.
The time is right for this sort of thing.
Food is everything.
Cambridge is right for this sort of thing.
What's it like? Delicious.
Good afternoon and welcome to Flavour with Alan Alder and me, Matt Bentman. You have a good week of food and drink, Alan?
Yes, I have, actually. I grew some squashes this year, the Crown Prince variety, which a lot of chefs recommend. And one of them weighed 13 pounds, which was pretty big. So there's been much eating of squash in our house. We've had roast squash, squash curry, squash cake, and on its way, squash soup.
I've been doing the same thing with tea, you know, roast tea, curried tea, tea au vin, tea in a sock, cheese tea. I just love tea. But no, it's been a very busy week. Even the cat's been eating better than I have this week. Sadly, there's no Sue Bailey today. Hopefully she'll be back with us next time. So let's have a look at the food and drink stories that we're covering today.
Yeah, we mentioned in our last programme Ellie Matter, the new cafe in Victoria Avenue where they make their own butter. Well, I went there on Wednesday, so we'll hear what else they get up to.
I went to check out the oldest wine shop in Victoria Road, which dates back to the Roman gods, as long as those gods were around in Cambridge in 1997.
Local chefs and cooks weigh in on the parsnip, with cooking ideas aplenty for the venerable autumn vegetable.
And we'll also have our regular features too. Free food in Cambridge, local food and drink news, social media updates, and at the end of the programme, our jobs roundup. So, let's tuck in.
Yes, let's indeed. New cafes. They open quite frequently in and around Cambridge, and each one involves a lot of preparation, a lot of anxiety, and a lot of cost. Fortunately, there are a lot of helpful people with expertise to guide the process. But what if you've just moved here from Australia, don't know anyone, don't have any links on social media, and haven't run a cafe before? Who do you turn to? And how do you make a success of it? That was the challenge that faced Amanda and Shane, who have recently opened Ellie Matter in Victoria Avenue. This is where the Radmore Farm Shop used to be. Just to make things even more of a challenge, while they get some things from other places like bread from Stir Bakery, they decided to make most of what they sell from scratch. Amanda, you've set up a cafe in Cambridge and you're making the items on the menu yourselves. The sandwiches that you've got, the Campsie, for example, it's got eggs in, curried mayonnaise, landcress and Bombay mix. That's pretty unusual. Do you make the curried mayonnaise?
I do use a pre-prepared curry powder, though. That is a secret ingredient. It's an Australian curry powder.
Because you're both from Australia originally.
Yes. Yeah. I didn't know that was uniquely Australian until I tried to make a curried egg mayonnaise here, and it just didn't taste right. And I learned that Keane's curry powder is Australian, so we managed to find some.
That's
And
the Manly, which is a roast beef sandwich, contains mustard cream. So is that something you produce yourself, a beetroot pickle?
Yep, we pickle the beetroots, we pickle the eschalots that we use on another item. It's a creme fraiche that's mixed with the mustard, horseradish.
And the Bronte's got roasted peppers, so you don't buy a bottle of roasted peppers, you roast the peppers?
Yes, we roast the peppers.
And you make your own butter?
Yes. Well, that's a happy accident. I do like butter very much, and high-quality butters. It is an item that I would be prone to spend a bit more money than usual on. I had never made it before. I thought it was a much more complicated process from what I'd read. I bought a new mixer, and in reading some tips on using the mixer, someone had made a comment, whatever you do when you're whipping cream, don't walk away. It's so powerful, you'll end up with butter. And that piqued my curiosity. And hey presto, it's magic.
Right, and it's better than the butter you would normally buy in the shops, presumably, otherwise you'd stop doing it.
Yes, I mean, it's coming back to why we want to make everything from scratch here and not use processed foods. all I put in that mixer is some good double cream. Fine. It's smooth and fresh and delicious.
And do customers notice the difference?
To be honest, there's so many flavours.
I'm sure if I was eating the Campsie sandwich, which has got, I think, as I've already said, eggs and curried mayonnaise with land cress and Bombay mix, what I'd be amazed by is the Bombay mix. That adds, presumably, you're doing that to add flavour as well as texture.
Yes, I think it backs up the curry flavour. They go together, but more than anything, it's texture. We're trying to get plenty of layers, flavour and different textures in the sandwiches to keep every mouthful interesting. And the way that we build them, I think it's important. You want to get a little bit of everything in every mouthful.
And Sean, you've got a background in selling fruit and vegetables wholesale, haven't you? So presumably you can identify which is a good supplier.
I like to think so. I worked in fresh produce for 2 decades back in Sydney, supplying many cafes and restaurants. I had a good eye for quality produce.
Well, I'm interested in the land cress, because, I mean, I know what land cress is. I've actually grown it myself, but it's not something you see every day, is it?
No, it's not. I was lucky to connect with Dr. Adrian Izzard from Wild Country Organics not long after we arrived in Cambridge mid last year. I started working for Wild Country doing their farmers markets. I was exposed to the wonders of his produce. I was fortunate enough to be able to try all these different vegetables that Adrian grows, and I just thought land cress really has a very interesting and unique flavour as well as a wonderful texture. When it came time to start thinking of ingredients that would work well in Amanda's sandwiches, land cress was something I brought to the table, and it's worked a charm.
So, and another aspect of the cafe is the coffee, because you haven't just bought a blend, you've devised your own.
Yeah, I was fortunate enough to be introduced to NASA from Coffee World out at Milton. And when we were thinking of coffee options for this cafe, he suggested to me that it might be worth trying some different blends of different origin beans and seeing if we could come up with something unique. So after much trial and error, I and Amanda were able to come up with a blend that we were happy with. And NASA thought it worked well. They've agreed to roast that mix specifically for our cafe. So we've got our very own house blend, which we call the Illawarra blend, because the Illawarra region of New South Wales is where we lived as a family before we left Australia.
But when you arrived in Cambridge and you decided you were going to open up a cafe, you had to find one, obviously. You've had a lot of work to do. You've had a lot of expense. You've had to take on a lease. You've stripped the place down. You've made a lovely job of it. It's a beautiful cafe. You've had to invest, presumably, in counters and all sorts of things. How did you feel? Because although I guess you were excited, were you not a bit sort of nervous as well as to whether you were just throwing your money away?
Exactly that, Alan. Exhilarating and terrifying, and lots of ups and downs along the way. When we first took over this space, we didn't anticipate that we would put so much time and work into it. But once you get going, I think, well, you may as well do it right the first time. I suppose we took a calculated risk. We'd been fortunate that we were able to sell our business, our previous business, before moving here. We had a little bit of a nest egg to get started, and that was the plan. Yeah, once that started running away, though, it did get very frightening.
Yeah.
And then ultimately, I mean, you know, I look around and there are things that there were shortcuts, or it's not quite perfect. And ultimately, one day, we just said, we just have to. It will never be perfect. We just have to open the doors and see what happens.
Yeah. Were there any unexpected difficulties? I'm sure you planned all of this, but was there anything unexpected?
Just for us, not having our connections like we had in Australia, particularly in the industry that we're in, in Australia, if we'd been opening a cafe in Sydney, for example, I had 15 to 20 cafe and restaurant owners who I could have turned to for advice. And a couple of them have come in handy since opening this cafe. But not having the network and community here of restaurateurs and cafe owners meant that we were sort of having to sort of start from scratch.
Right, well, finding suitable tradespeople.
Yeah, tradespeople. And we were lucky in that we, by the point that we started to put this place together, I had met people like NASA from Coffee World. I'd become friends with Frank from La Maison du Steak. Elvis from the Geldart is also a friend of mine. So there were a small team of people who were happy to offer advice and recommendations, and they were the recommendations that worked well. It was the ones that we took a blind punt on that were a little bit more challenging along the way.
Right. But you also discovered John at the Art of Meat, which is quite a discovery.
Exactly. John's been fantastic in every way, and he's such a networker himself. So he's made some suggestions for different people that he thought would work well with us.
Yeah.
And his quality of his meat is just second to none.
But another aspect is social networking, because had you started up in Australia, if you're on Instagram, you would have had a lot of followers who would know about what you're doing, whereas over here that's had to start from scratch as well, presumably.
Yes, and that is not our forte either. It's much easier if other people talk about you.
Yeah, well, other people are talking about you. I mean, if you go onto Google Maps and read the reviews, they are fantastic reviews. There are so many five-star reviews and people who, I think, really, really appreciate what you're doing. Is that a relief, or were you expecting that?
It's a great relief, and we appreciate it so much. And, yeah, we really, really are enjoying ourselves.
But also, Sean, you're selling vinyl records.
Yes, I've been a lifelong collector of records. I got rid of close to 8,000 before I left Australia. I'd done record fairs in the lead up to leaving and did a lot of private sales as well. I stripped my collection back to about 4,000, which I shipped over to the UK. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of formed the basis of this small, tiny vinyl room we've got out the back of the cafe. And
So there's a turntable in there. Can people come in and put a record on?
Absolutely, yes. We have a turntable set up with headphones, and they're all secondhand records. Everything in the room is for sale. But I also like seeing people come in and just play a record, you know. Mm. There's no obligation to buy. Mm. I had a chap come in last week and he'd never put a record on in his life, and he took such joy. Someone had to show him how to use a turntable. And he just sat down with a coffee and played a couple of records, and he walked out of there beaming, which was such a delight.
Yeah, okay.
It's a lovely place, Zelimata, and their new opening times are from Tuesday to Saturday, 8:30 till 3. Although we beamed in on the sandwiches, which are astonishing, there are also treats like Anzac biscuits, chocolate mousse and flourless chocolate cake. And the reviews they've had, as we said, are incredibly positive. And if you're wondering where the name comes from, Zelimata is an indigenous East Australian expression meaning our place. And actually, I mentioned to Shane that my favourite Australian track, which I have on vinyl, is a track called An Unguarded Moment by a band called The Church, who have done a tour here recently. They're not terribly well known. Do you know them?
My Australian knowledge only goes from about the 80s onwards for music.
It's an 80s track, yeah. Anyway, Shane said that he met the singer and songwriter from The Church on the bus in Sydney. So I thought, wow. Now details of free food available in and around Cambridge, and the information about what's available and where to get it comes from the Olio app, which exists so that people's or businesses' surplus food doesn't go to waste.
That's right. And today's look at Olio shows us that Russell in Hobart Road is giving away a few items, including sesame seed brioche burger buns, naan breads and tiger batons, whilst Keris on Sedgwick Street, which is also off Mill Road, she's got packs of four or six, I couldn't tell from the photo, of soft wholemeal rolls available, along with baguettes and sourdough loaves, all saved from Sainsbury's this morning. Tom off St Kilda's Avenue in King's Hedges, he's got Italian rolls, Scotch rolls, cheese rolls, tiger cobblers, bloomers, baguettes and batons to offload, whilst Eugenie in Abraham Road has a tub of clover light to offer. Next up is Marie. She's in Great Shelford. She has some freshly picked apples from her garden. Not overly sweet and probably best for cooking with, she says. And finally, Yaroslav in Lucerne Close Cherry Hinton has a box of Clipper Organic White Tea. Almost full, he just didn't like the taste. But that is a taste of what is on offer on the Olio Free Food app in and around Cambridge today.
Right, and as I was walking in today, I walked today, not cycle, because it's so wet.
Mm.
I walked past the Farmers Outlet shop, which we haven't talked about for a very long time because it's been shut for a very long time. But today it was open and Kelly, who owns the shop, was there and it was full of stuff. And I said, are you reopening? She said, no, we've just got a lot of tomatoes and they are all giving them away to students or people on benefits. And if you're not a student or on benefit, it's 30 pence a punnet or 5 punnets for a pound. And they've got stacks of them. So you can just go today. And if you're a business, she said, it would be great for businesses if they need lots of tomatoes extremely cheaply.
Gosh, yes. So brilliant, isn't it?
Great thing. But let's just quickly mention the other free app that we usually talk about called Too Good To Go. And that has unsold foods from restaurants, cafes and shops, often at less than half price. Instead of specifying each unsold item, the surplus food is simply put into a magic bag, ready for you to take home. And that saves it being binned at the end of today's trading.
OK, let's go on to our first news break now. And the Lion and Lamb in Milton has reopened and is doing special dishes every weekday from 12 noon to 2:30. Things like steak and chips and a drink on Mondays for $14.95. And there'll be other mains on other days at the same price too.
From the end of this month, Fansets in Mill Road will be incorporating a 12.5% service charge into its pricing. So there will no longer be an optional charge at the end of the meal. It means that their staff's pay every month is consistent and not dependent on how full the restaurant is or how generous the customers are.
On Fridays and Saturday nights from next week at Finboy's in Mill Road, the four window seats will be offering a lighter menu than the usual tasting menu. Oysters and champagne, perhaps, or prawn toast, snacks and cocktails. This special menu is going to be revealed on Tuesdays and bookable by email.
Co-Farm is 5 years old on the 20th of October, and you can book a place on their celebration, which includes a tour of the market garden. You can have warm food around a campfire and chat to the co-farmers. And you can buy some produce while you're there too. And the open day is on the 20th from the 3 to 7:30pm.
There's a new farm shop called Willow Grange Farm Shop. It'll be opening in Chittering from the 23rd of October. It's going to sell a lot of local produce, including grain culture breads, brewboard beers, beef from the farm itself, with lamb and pork coming soon. There's also jams, condiments, oils, sauces, and a cafe as well, which is already open 5 days a week, Wednesday to Sunday.
Amelie is finishing its extended pop-up at Cambridge Cookery on the 25th of October, but it will still be found in the Grafton Centre and at Ben's Yard near Ely. Meanwhile, the cafe at Cambridge Cookery will be closed for refurbishment from the 26th of October and will reopen on the 20th of November with a winter menu that will include cured and pickled dishes and some Scandinavian baked goods.
Now, there's a Food for the Planet festival on the 26th of October when Cambridge Sustainable Food will host a day celebrating beans. There'll be bean-based cookery demonstrations at the bean counter, bean-based talks, and a host of activities that celebrate beans and their benefit to people and the planet. There'll be stalls from Waterland CSA, CSA stands for Community Supported Agriculture, stalls from Cambridge Community Kitchen, Trumpington Allotments, Waterbeach Waste Education, Cambridge Storytellers, and Cambridge Organic Market Garden. Hot food will be available too. Entry is free, and it's Cambridge Sustainable Food's biggest free event of the year. It'll run from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Museum of Technology in Cheddar's Lane.
Biscotti di Debra is popping up again at Tradizione in Mill Road, and this will be on the 27th of October from 10:30 to 2:30 for patisserie, donuts and coffee. And that's the news for now. More later.
OK, now Bacchanalia is a wine and beer shop. It's a bit of an institution in Cambridge. It first opened in 1997. There's a branch on Mill Road, but today I am heading to the first Bacchanalia to meet with owner Paul Bowes. 79 Victoria Road, just up past Mitcham's Corner. Hello, Paul.
Hello, Matt. Welcome to Bacchanalia. Was that cheesy or what?
Very cheesy.
Oh, customer.
Have you got a bottle of wine called Coping Mechanism?
It's fair to say most of them are called that.
Yeah, sure.
Were you after a nice Bordeaux?
I'm after two nice Bordeaux's, mate.
Brilliant. So that is £458.
Thanks ever so much.
Where's that's your special price.
Where's the frequent flyer discount?
It's a special. Excellent.
In case my wife is listening more to the point.
It's grand.
Yours.
Thanks, sir.
Take care. All the best.
Good luck.
Cheers.
You might get some nice audio of our till, our original till, which I'm very proud of.
Is this a bit of an Arkwright's till?
It is a little bit. The Mill Road shop, I think they've gone through about three tills. I think they're a bit more ham-fisted than me. I'm very light touch. I'm like Liberace on this till here. It's not like the place is really old-fashioned, but, yeah, it's nice to have these things that are reminders and have stood by it.
Yeah.
So it's good.
Bacchanalia is your classic corner shop. A couple of steps up, shelves stacked floor to ceiling with bottles from around the world, and old wooden floors baptised with three decades of wine splashings.
I guess even a simple thing like a printed price that you've got with your little Bacchanalia name on it just adds to the authenticity and the, you know, the character of the shop.
Absolutely.
And you can add to that a working fireplace for the winter.
It is.
You've got fresh wood in there.
Yeah. We do. It's nice. So, you know, at Christmas time you have the kids there.
They must love
glowing
it.
Their cheeks by the fire.
The Bacchanalia site has been many things in the past. An antique shop, a gentleman's outfitters, a fruit and veg shop. How many bottles do you think are in here?
Oh, individual bottles?
Yeah.
So as in facings, type of wine, 500 is my best guess. There are always new wines out there that you find, but it's good to have that discipline of saying, no, we've got this amount of wine for Riocas, but when we go to tastings, the new wine that we try has to be considerably better than those for it to be swapped in. All the wines that we've got are shop favourites. So that's when people say, what's your favourites? And people say, oh, have you tried all the wines? They say, well, of course I have, because I wouldn't sell anything that I didn't know how it tasted.
So you're kind of, you're stocking an impeccable cupboard. You know, you sound like you've got a lot of people's dream job here because you live above the shop.
And behind the shop
and
as well.
Behind.
My wife would tell me off if I didn't tell you. It's a nice house and this is our front couple of rooms.
Yeah. Minimal transport costs.
Absolutely. Well, that door there, that's my commute.
And you opened in 97.
I did. I suppose the history was that I used to work for Noel Young. A lot of your listeners will know Noel for a lovely few years. Learned an awful lot.
Yeah.
And I studied wine in Ireland as well. So I had grounding and did my exams in Ireland. But the very interesting thing was when I started working with Noel is that the Irish wine market was definitely a few years behind. It was a steep learning curve, but also I suppose it was just getting into the new world wave. Didn't have huge expectations of financially well off or anything like that. That wasn't what it was all about. It was all about just making sure that I had a good quality of life and doing a job that I loved. The shelves that you can see here around you.
Yeah.
Myself and my dad built those shelves, so 27 years ago. A little bit creaky around the edges, as we all are.
Some of them give me a heart attack because I can see the bottles just tipping out over the edge. You know, like with those machines where you drop the 2p's in and they...
Yeah.
That's what it looks like here, but they're all safe, of
they're
course.
All safe. Very rarely do we get a breakage, and we're not slapdash, but I think maybe I'll push that one back a little bit. No, Grant. If a bottle does go, you get very adept at trapping it like a football on the top of your foot to take the old energy out of it. Luckily, we've got a wooden floor. 19 times out of 20, they bounce.
When we think about the different independents in Cambridge, just pick a few, for example, so Bacchanalia, Cambridge Wine Merchants, Thirsty. Do they all have their particular niche? You find different things in the different shops?
I would say so, yes. For instance, I don't see Thirsty as competition to myself. Well, I suppose both Thirsty and Cambridge Wine Merchants, they've gone down the wine bar model. I personally like to have the purity of just being a shop. And by doing that, I keep it very simple. I close the door at 7 o'clock and that's me finished for the evening. But we are aware that there will be friendly rivalry in different ways with other independents. When I was working with Noel and wanting to open up my own shop, I really made it as strong a job as I can to not affect his business too much. So he was over in Trumpington. I moved over here, so far side of town, and I was generating my own customers.
Any wine that you'd like to champion?
Yes. This wine here, it's a Pêche 2019. Well, I tried this at a tasting the other day, and it was my favourite of the tasting. Ooh. 250 wines I tried, and I found out that the supplier actually has it on offer for Christmas time. So I thought, excellent, because it's normally about $18.99. Mm-hmm. It's going to be on the shelf for about £16 with the offer. So again, you know, independent shops, we don't do the half price thing. That's overinflated original price. Mm. So I got in a couple of dozen of us thinking, yeah, this is the one. The wine came in and I thought, I'll just bring this bottle to have with friends. So I opened up the wine and I thought, oh, nuts. It's a different vintage. The vintage that I tasted was a 2021, which was brilliant. And this one is 2019. And I hadn't tweaked. You can see it's a small thing. And I didn't realise that they'd have a 21 at the tasting. And then I place an order the following week and they're actually selling off of that old vintage. So, well, it was still very nice, mm-hmm. but not as amazing as the other. So as you can see here now, I've said to them, I said, oh, that it isn't as nice. And they said, oh, we'll give you a big discount. So I'm now selling it at $11.99, which is the fair price for this vintage of this wine. But when the next vintage comes in, which I believe is going to be in a couple of weeks, it'll be brilliant. It's called Copa. It's modernish. Pais, P-A-I-S is the grape. The 2021 is going to be a star come around Christmas when it eventually comes in.
Actually, one of my favourites. Now you got me talking about favourites. Hang on a minute. This one here. Matt was anxious that I was going to drop it on the floor. This isn't my first rodeo, me old pal. But this one here, Alto, and it's Carignan. Carignan is a grape that grows across the south of France and goes into a lot of day-to-day wines. But this one, this is for the people who normally would like a big Shiraz. Now, classic big Australian Shirazes, the quality kicks in definitely at £15 and above. You can get cheaper ones that are tenner and very pleasant and drinkable. But this Alto from Los Romeros, Carignan, from Chile at $13.99, it's a really tasty, big, big autumnal wine. So, lovely.
Sure. So, what were you after?
The best South African wine you have, red one.
Excellent. You have lots of choices. Do you feel that she is looking for a Pinotage or a Cabernet?
I think the Cabernet would be...
best?
Yeah.
Brilliant. $24.99, okay?
I was looking like 100.
You're looking like 100? Well done, you.
You know.
Well, we don't quite have a 100 quitter, but we do have Hartenburg here, which is...
Hartenburg sounds familiar.
Does it sound familiar? Hang on a minute, let me just check the vintage. It's 2006. It's a teeny writing. But Gravel Hill, Shiraz.
I think I had the wine from there.
Yeah.
Hartenburg, same estate.
Yeah.
Sold.
Lovely. Let's do that one.
Do you have by any chance a present wrapping
Yes, I do.
That will be perfect.
Lovely. Let me organise your wine bag. It's nice and understated, a bit like yourself.
Yes, yeah. Thank you.
Of course, you take the price tag off. Do you want me to put a more expensive price on?
No.
There we go. Well, I hope we've chosen well.
Yeah, I'll let you know. Fantastic, great. Thank you very much.
Pleasure. Cheers. Take care. Cheers.
Bye.
Happy to help anybody find any wines that they fancy.
Lovely. Thank you very much, Paul.
Oh, thanks, Matt. Be really good to have a chat. Really enjoyed it.
And you're listening to Flavour on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Yeah, that was Paul Bowes, owner of Bacchanalia Wine Merchants. Just to note, they do also do beers and spirits too. They've got lots of new products in for Christmas as well. Plenty of offers on sparkling and sweet wines, ports and sherries. You can find all this on their website. The website is winegod.co.uk. And you can also follow Bacchanalia on Facebook, where their latest post was from last Sunday, showing them at Neverdanya Restaurant in Newmarket Road, celebrating Neverdanya's 10th anniversary, and one of several places around the city as well that they supply wine to.
Good. Coming up after the break, we've got the triumphant return of Neera's curries, we get some ideas on cooking with parsnips, and we've a banquet of food, wine and social media news, and discuss the Cambridge food scene with someone who only popped in for a coffee. See you in two.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
In 1960s Cambridge, the Rolling Stones performed at the Rex Ballroom, Chris Farlow was on stage at the Alley Club, and Helen Shapiro played live at the Regal Cinema. On Sunday mornings, John Gannon takes you back to the swinging 60s with music and memories. John Gannon's 60s scene, Sunday mornings at 8 on Cambridge 105 Radio. Listen live on Radio Player.
So, you're looking to buy something that's completely unique. And it's time you discovered the All Saints Garden Art and Craft Market. Showcasing specialists in artisan crafts, our award-winning traditional art and craft market offers everything from jewellery to ceramics, greetings cards to handmade cosmetics, art to leather, and so much more. Meet the maker every Saturday between 10 and 5 in All Saints Garden on Trinity Street in Cambridge.
Fancy some mouth-watering fish and chips? Yeah, me too. At Rumble's Fish Bar Trumpington, they've got them straight out of the fryer. Or how about a charcoal grilled kebab? The lamb's delicious. Gourmet burgers, chicken strips, spicy wings, it's all at Rumble's. And veggie options too. Rumble's Fish Bar Trumpington. 2 to 3 Anstey Way, Trumpington. Opposite the Shell Garage. Open Monday to Saturday from 11 to 9.30 and Sundays from 1 to 9. Or order online with Deliveroo. Just search Rumble's Fish Bar Trumpington.
And welcome back to Flavour. More news now, and Apple Day is approaching, with Apple Week activities from the 26th of October to the 3rd of November at the Food Museum in Stowmarket. Apple Day celebrations at Stapleford Granary on the 31st of October and the 1st of November. Cambridge University Botanic Garden has its Apple Day on the 20th of October. Darwin Nursery's Apple Day is the 29th of October from 10 till 3, with lots of family activities and a live Kaylee Band in the afternoon.
And then it is Halloween. On the 1st of November at North Stow Tap and Social, it's a Day of the Dead party with classic Halloween and Mexican music, some Mexican-inspired food from Steak and Honour, and Pudini with tacos.
And Pudini will be doing a kitchen takeover at North Stow Tap and Social on the 5th of November, as will Pasta Bar on the 12th, Manor Soul on the 19th, and Normado on the 26th.
From the 1st to the 3rd of November, you can celebrate Diwali with a special festive menu at Tower Kitchen and Tower Lounge. And Scotsall Day is taking bookings now for New Year's Eve. There's a three-course dinner, which will be £29.50, with an option to add bottomless fizz for an additional £20.
Some unusual news from Amphora. On Sunday, the 27th of October, there will be a masterclass on tasting, not of wine, but of coffee. Led by Adam Pulfer, founder of Saffron Walden Coffee, this explores the origins of coffee, how it is roasted, how terroir, processing and roasting contribute to the flavour. Also how to brew it and how to taste it. There will be a tasting of several different single origin coffees, and Adam's coffee beans will be available to buy at a discount. It takes place at 11 a.m. on the first floor of Novi in Regent Street, Cambridge. The cost is £30. And stay tuned for news of Amphora's wine tastings coming up shortly.
Now, in Congratulations Corner today, it's Grape Britannia, which has won the Retailer of the Year Award at the Cambridge Independent Business Awards. And Co-Farm is 5 years old. Happy birthday. I think it's 5 years old, isn't it, Alan?
I thought it was 20 years old, but then maybe it is 5 years old.
We mentioned five years earlier.
Yes, I think maybe five.
Well, happy birthday to them all the same. And the list of places that you can buy Co-Farm's fruit and veg from is increasing, to include, most recently, Green Nest, formerly Harvest.
And finally for now, the very popular curries made by Neera in the Derby stores in Newnham are back after Neera's recent break. And here is Neera to talk about them.
I always have either chicken tikka, chicken korma, or butter chicken. These three are very mild ones. And then I have normal chicken curry, normal lamb curry, and then loads of vegetarian ones as well. But
right. Well, and what sort of vegetables are in the vegetarian ones?
Vegetable, aubergine, potato are really, really popular. Spinach and potatoes, and then sometime I put paneer in spinach. That's good as well.
And your origins are from the Punjab?
Punjab, yeah.
Yeah. So Punjab. Is what you're making, does it reflect
most
Punjabi?
Of it Punjabi style. Yeah, it's Punjabi style. And I keep on trying different recipes, different things.
Yeah. And always Punjabi style?
Always Punjabi style, yeah.
Right, so what's the characteristic of Punjabi food? Are there particular spices which are popular in Punjab?
My main ingredients are cumin, coriander. I use quite a lot fenugreek seeds or leaves. They are very, very good flavour to add into any food.
And where does the heat come from then? Is from
chilies.
Yeah.
That's just from the green chilies. Right. I only use green chilli. I never use powdered chilli, no paprika, nothing. Just pure green chilli. Just grind them and just use my own ground garlic, ginger. Only thing I buy that's ready-made is like turmeric. Everything else, I don't use any ready-made masalas or ready-made paste, nothing.
Yeah, well, they're very good. And as well as dishes like dansak, spooners, kormas, dals and the others she mentioned, Neera does occasional specials, which you don't see elsewhere, for example, pakori kadi. So good to have them back. And apparently Neera was up until 1 o'clock this morning cooking them because they sold out yesterday.
Oh, blimey. Well, for this next piece, I wanted to try something a little experimental. Now, this isn't an interview, it isn't a feature. I was just imagining the listener as being someone returning to Cambridge after several years away and wondering what's changed here. And we're going to do this via a man called Bill. Bill is a writer and an artist in Cambridge. I met him yesterday. We sat down in a new cafe called Flea Vintage, and we just chewed the fat, really. If anyone's familiar with the concept of slow TV, that's normal events happening in real time, this is kind of like the radio version.
Yeah. Did you say, sometimes you'll go down the market and pick up some stuff on your
fresh
route?
Every day. If I'm in Cambridge, it's the fruit and veg opposite Marks and Sparks. It's an invaluable resource that you can buy loose vegetable, loose fruit, and their quality is pretty good,
I think in the last 10, 15 years especially, there's been more and more food stalls coming onto the market.
Yeah, it's the street food phenomena that sort of, I'm sure, started in London and sort of seeped out into the regions. Well, just as a good way for the migrant workforce to set up shop and get on and do what they're good at, which is supplying their indigenous bits and pieces food-wise. I can't say it's ever appealed to me. I prefer to go in somewhere and sit down, and whatever that might be in terms of a foreign dish or two, but also the traditional English fish and chips or even the pie and mash in London. You can't beat.
There's not a lot of fish and chip places in Cambridge anymore, are there?
Well, you say that. Little Rose in Trumpington Street used to be Loch Fine. So that was a dedicated fish restaurant, a proper sit-down, white linen, silver service, and it was very good. But I think with the pandemic, it obviously knocked a lot of people. They were shut for some time, but it's the same company, but they revamped the business model, and they're called Little Rose now. And it's more of a general sit-down in terms of food. But they still do fish and chips, but they do some tremendous English dishes.
Mm.
The last time I was there, I had an amazing piece of work. And I said to what I thought was the waiter, I was very impressed with their presentation of it. You know, just of the arrangement of the food on the plate, the way they stacked it up and presented. But it was the chef. So I actually got some really good service. The chef came out and was just serving his dish. And, of course, you know, once I knew that, we were talking good and proper, you know.
Yeah. That's a really good example of, I was going to say adapt or die, because that's what someone said to me in the market just this morning. I was commenting about the lack of stores that were here on a Friday. It was quite empty. And then he started to describe some of the stalls, ones that have gone recently, and the struggle that's going on right now.
Yeah.
Because he said, like, they're really feeling the pressure of being encroached by all of the local eateries that are surrounding them.
One example is Gales turning up on the market square there. Now, fine, you know, some people like their chain, and you can see how they're spreading out in terms of they have a location down by the station.
Yeah.
But the downside of that is that you lose a baker on the market. You know, so when they turned up, he closed down because he knew he would be in competition with them to some extent, not total, but he went, you know, and he'd been there for years. So there's only one baker on the market now. But I must admit, if I'm honest, I don't buy bread from a market stall. I find that a bit of a strange thing. I don't know why, it's just sort of what you're used to, you know. And of course, you know, you cannot beat Norfolk Street just up the road here. Norfolk Street Bakery. No, it's the best thing since sliced bread. Only she doesn't. Oh, they do slice. Yes, of course they slice, if you want them to. But I'd never do that. You know, they're a rustic loaf that they sort of do every day is just unbeatable.
Well, Norfolk Street Bakery, that's run by that Portuguese lady.
Yes,
isn't
it is.
Yeah.
And funny enough, they've spread out. They have a second branch that's been at the top of Station Road for some time. But they still call it Norfolk Street Bakery. Slightly confusing.
I've not been to that one on Station Road, have you?
Yes. Yeah, just picking up the odd bit. And they have a sit down there, actually, which Norfolk Street, first one, doesn't. Yeah, you know, it's good. Once again, you cannot beat their bread and their continental savoury pastries.
They're very nice. I made a terrible mistake when I went to record with them. I said, oh, can I come along when you're baking early in the morning and record with you? So she says, yeah, okay. I went the next day, it was pouring with rain. I turned up there like a drowned rat. And of course, there's no sound because it's just them turning the dough.
Oh, you thought it might be a bit dynamic sound-wise.
Yeah, get some nice proper effects, prove I'm actually there at the time. Yeah. What a waste of time. But there you go. But still, the food is good.
That's the main thing.
Yeah.
What I do know is that when you get to it with the writing and anything like that, time goes very quick.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's been good to talk.
OK, right, well.
OK, then.
Nice to meet you anyway, Bill.
OK, nice to meet you.
Yeah, that was Bill. And because Bill is an artist, I automatically assumed that he doesn't have a last name. I met with Bill at Flea Vintage. That was on Norfolk Street. And on the door of Flea Vintage, there are four words. Clothes, bikes, coffee, stuff. And that stuff, I assume, being cakes, amongst other things. Because Rachel, who runs Flea Vintage, she wasn't feeling very well yesterday and she couldn't really talk. So I'm hoping to go back there to do a proper feature on the place. But I did find out that the cakes at Flea Vintage are made by Nora Kipola from Finland. Now, she runs NK Bakery. She rents a kitchen space in Cambridge once a week. And she also works for Sweet Pea Market Garden as well. So if you'd like to check out her cakes in the meantime, you can either go to Flea Vintage on Norfolk Street, because they sell her cinnamon and cardamom buns, or you can check out Nora's Instagram account. That's NK, the baking caterer.
Wine, wine, wine. Drink that wine. Supercharged with Wine, 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 taking us into the wine news, starting with Amphora's tastings. On the 22nd of October, Climate and Wine, tasting how the climate influences grapes and wine. It's at the Station Tavern in Station Square and costs £38. The tasting on the 30th of October, Tasty Italians, has sold out, but you might try and get a cancellation. The sherry tasting on the 6th of November has been replaced by a third chance to taste some exotic varieties, a very popular tasting of wines made from indigenous grapes growing in less well-known wine regions. And that too is at the Station Tavern and is £38. And these tastings can be booked on the Amphora website. There's also a fine wine symposium at Market House in Cambridge's Market Square on the 25th of October. And this is for a small group. And here is Chong explaining what the symposia are about.
Over the past 3 years, I've been slowly amassing very special wines, most of which I have one, perhaps two bottles of. The idea is that these should be enjoyed over a few hours with a group of people who really appreciate them. I've done a couple in the past at Amphora, but sort of ran out of time in the end. These would be themed evenings. For instance, there could be an aged Barolo, an aged Bordeaux. I mean, aging is certainly a theme. The wines become much more complex and interesting with age, as does cheese, in fact. Mm. So I'm keen to do some more of those because they were so rewarding when I did them, and this is something that I could easily do in a separate venue that wouldn't be as complex as my normal wine tastings.
Yeah. If you're interested in attending, email Chong Chong Bo directly, Chong, which is spelled C-O-N-G, at amphoracambridge.com. The cost is around £95, and the wines will be accompanied by hors d'oeuvre from Market House's kitchen.
At Cambridge Wine Merchants on the 3rd of November, there's a grand tour of Italy from 2 to 6pm in the Cherry Hinton Road branch. It's a walk-around tasting event, and advance tickets are £10 or £15 at the door, which then gets you a complimentary glass of fizz on arrival and £5 in vouchers to use to buy the samples, price of which starts at £1. Food will also be available too.
Also on the 3rd of November, the WSET Level 1 in Wines is being offered by Cambridge Wine School in King Street Cellar. It runs from 10am to 5pm, it costs £235, and full details are on their website. But so you know, you'll need to book a week in advance so you can be registered for the exam.
There's a bonfire night, Wine Spectacular, at the King Street Cellar on the 5th of November from 7pm. And the cost for the two-hour tasting is £40. You can book that through the Cambridge Wine School. And Gutter and Stars in French's Road has tastings of five wines from its range on the 7th of November and the 21st of November. Tastings last from 6.30 to 7.30 in the evening and cost £30.
On the 6th of November, the Wine Rooms in Hills Road has a tasting of wines from the Sangiovese grape. That's used in many wines from Tuscany and central Italy. And the tasting runs from 7 till 8.30pm and includes light bar snacks. And the cost, £30.
Lovely. And that is all our wine news for today.
We're well into autumn now, a favourite time for many as far as food is concerned, with the deep, warming flavours of root vegetables. So here are some ideas for cooking parsnips from food writer Rosie Sykes, Alex Rushmer from Van der Lyle, and Tina Roche of Cambridge Cookery.
I just love all the winter roots. I think autumn, winter is a lovely, exciting time, very different from summer. But I think parsnip and nuts go really well together. Parsnips and goat's cheese are wonderful together. But I created this recipe just to do something slightly different, and it's a cake. So it's almost like a carrot cake, but instead of carrot, you use grated parsnip. And there's an interesting flavour profile in parsnip, which is quite close to coconut. So this cake I created is made with, instead of butter, I use coconut oil. So a simple creaming method, instead of butter, use coconut oil. I cream that with some brown sugar and then make a very basic cake with some flour and eggs. Just look up a carrot cake recipe and instead of butter, use coconut oil and grated parsnip. And it's really interesting how well they go together. Mm. They really, really go well together. So that is a lovely cake. It's got a little bit of cinnamon in it. So it's a lovely, warm, autumnal cake, and I've even served it warm as a pudding with some creme fraiche.
Parsnip is a fantastic root vegetable. It's one of those things that people don't fully appreciate, I think, how sweet it is. Until we started making sugar or importing sugar into this country, parsnip was actually used incredibly often in sweet preparations because it has a very high natural sugar content. There's a restaurant near Bury St Edmunds called Tuddenham Mill where they make an amazing parsnip dessert, a parsnip cake with roasted parsnips, which is fantastic, really good with salted caramel and toffee flavours. For a more savoury preparation, I used to make, and still do, it's one of my Christmas recipes, a parsnip soup. So very, very simple parsnip soup, lots of butter, lots of cream, so it's very rich, it's very decadent. But instead of finishing it with cream or butter after it's been cooked and blended, a little bit of white chocolate is very, very good with parsnip, just to enrich it, just to bring a little bit of sweetness, and that cocoa butter and the parsnip works really, really well together.
Right, you say just a little bit, because you can overdo chocolate, can't you? You know, people add chocolate to stews in a sort of South American style. Mm. It's easily overdone. Do you have to be very cautious, or
yeah, you do.
And more forgiving?
You're absolutely right. You have to be very careful adding white chocolate, more careful than if you're adding dark chocolate, which has a natural bitterness. There's no cocoa at all in white chocolate. It's much more naturally sweet. So just add one or two buttons at a time, and then when you get that richness, when you get that sweetness just beginning to come through, that's the point at which you should probably stop and not add any more.
Tina, any recipes for parsnips?
So many, but I just think, you know, at the end of the day, if I could only choose one for the rest of my life, I just still think, as an accompaniment to any roast, I mean, particularly, you know, we think of it perhaps as an accompaniment to turkey, but, you know, any roast bird, and just roasting it with a bit of molasses, honey, you know, any kind of liquid sugar, it is just so good. And as a leftover, I think the thing is, they are so good that I always find, no matter how much I make of it, there are never any leftovers, because people go, oh, I'll just have that last piece, particularly when you have a lovely caramelized bit, end bit to it. But if you do make enough to have cold leftovers, they make a stunning salad the next day with things like pomegranate seeds on top. And you can put a bit of raw Brussels sprouts in there as well. So just shave with a sharp knife or a shade, like a mandolin. But this combination of very modest sort of ingredients make a really, really cracking salad. So having leftover roast parsnips is just a delight, I think.
Right. When roasting, there's a dispute in our house as to whether you parboil them and then roast them, or whether you roast them entirely. Have you a view on that?
Yeah, I know exactly why you're having that debate. I think that we're so used here, I think, to thinking of our roast potatoes, which we are very, very sort of unique in making. You know, no other European country makes them like that. It would be roasted from cold, and you get a very different result. So I think partly is that we kind of think, well, parboiling has got to lead to something good. And it does, but I actually think that usually you don't want to spend too much time perhaps cooking. You've got enough, you know, stuff to do with other things. I think they cook just as well, roast just as well. As long as you have some kind of emollient, you know, with it, I think they're just as good roasted raw. Don't even need to peel them, in my opinion, particularly if they're organic, just chuck them in.
Lovely. Okay. Thank you very much.
And there's the music signalling time for news from social media.
Yes, some recent updates on social media. Culinaris in Mill Road is selling a rare citrus called Buddha's Hand, which apparently is wonderful eaten raw or cut in thin slices in cocktails, as well as a delicious and versatile baking ingredient. Due to its intense flavour, it is also used in vinaigrettes, and they have some fresh in Culinaris. Congratulations to Restaurant 22, which has made it onto the AA's Notable Wine List Award. There's a tasting at Cambridge Wine Merchants of Mount Redon Chateauneuf du Pape on the 4th of November. That's in King's Parade. There are only 6 places available. It costs £25. Anything else? Yes, Limoncello is doing a set menu Monday to Thursday from 11 till 3, and then from 5 until 9:30 p.m. which seems pretty good. And Cambridge Juice is now open every Friday up until the 20th of December for tastings and purchases. And it's behind Fieldgate Nursery, 32 Station Road in Meldrith. And there's some recent updates from social media.
There's Booker T and the MGs with Green Onions, taking us into our job section, and we kick off with Hot Numbers. They got vacancies for a chef and a head chef at the Roastery in Shepworth, and then a chef in Cambridge and a front of house staff in Gwydir Street.
Norfolk Street Bakery wants a kitchen assistant at its Station Road branch. Hours are from 8 till 3 with Sundays guaranteed off. For more information, email station.rd.bakery@gmail.com or send a message on WhatsApp 077 823 1285.
And finally, Cafe at Highgate is looking for staff to work its events, mainly on Saturday evenings, with occasional Saturday and Sunday daytime shifts. And that takes us to the end of today's programme. We're here on alternate Saturdays at 12 noon, repeated Mondays at 2, and available as a podcast from all the usual places. And coming up next is an hour of the Cambridge Music Mix.
We're back on the 2nd of November with lots more food and drink news, jobs and features. So until then, from me and Matt, goodbye. Bye.
Please don't get me wrong, see I forgive you in a song we'll call The Likely Lands. But if it's left to you, I know exactly what you'd do with all the dreams we had. Cause blood runs thicker, how it's thick as these, you know. It's important to you.
It's important to me.
I try to make you see,
you don't
but
know.
You don't want to know.
If you puzzle some along and get forgiven in a song, I'll have to touch my life.